Welcome to Ask the Expert with noted radio host Steve Sleeper. Each week, Steve interviews entrepreneurs and professionals and shares their intriguing stories of success and service. Now, here's radio veteran Steve Sleeper.
Our guest today on Ask the Expert is Nathan Kleiber with Seattle Divorce Services in Seattle, Washington. Nathan, how are you today?
I'm all right. It's been a good one so far, Steve. Thanks for asking.
Well, good, good. Hey, Nathan, tell me a little bit about yourself and your firm.
Let's see. I've been practicing family law in Washington State, Seattle area for about 7 years now, going on 7 years now. I've got a theater undergrad, so I was an actor for a long time. I did that up in Bellingham, Washington, worked in Denver, Chicago for a while, and then came back to Seattle for law school, went to Seattle University for that. I'm practicing with, as you mentioned, Seattle Divorce Services. We're a mid-sized law firm in the Ballard neighborhood of Seattle. There's six attorneys here. We do all family law and family law related stuff. So, you know, mostly what you'd expect: divorces, child custody, child support. The whole firm, myself as well, is how I ended up landing here and why I like it here so much. The whole firm is really focused on conflict reduction, trying to find the peaceful, less antagonistic ways to approach divorces and other family law stuff. Even in the traditional family law context, there's a lot of opportunities to work collaboratively, seek alternative dispute resolution rather than trial. Personally, myself, I'm really trying to push my practice in the direction of not only collaborative law, where I'm one of several attorneys here trained in formal collaborative law, but also in alternative family law. So I'm trying to set up a practice, or I should say, push my practice more towards dealing with people who are working with sort of non-traditional family structures, people who don't want to get married but want to have some of the protections that come, with traditional marriage and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, with changing society, that sounds like a wise thing to do. And you've answered some of this next question a little bit already, but it provides a good segue. What should we look for in a family lawyer?
Bad news. You should look for people who are telling you stuff you don't want to hear. And I think this probably goes for any kind of lawyer. But you go in to meet with a lawyer, you got, 15, maybe 30 minutes, an hour if you're lucky, to talk about what's going on with you. And anybody who tells you everything that you are hoping they're going to say is I think, suspect. Because family law is a difficult and painful thing, so there ought to be difficult and painful things that you hear even upon that first consultation, which doesn't necessarily segue great into the other thing I would say look for, but it's mostly about good feel, a good match, just like looking for a therapist or I'd say a doctor. You want somebody that you feel like you can communicate well with, who you understand what they're saying. It's largely about feel, I would say.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes sense. Well, divorce is a tough thing. Do folks wait too long to file for divorce?
That's a good question, and it's interesting because I get asked that relatively frequently, and I don't know. I'm not a statistician. I don't even know what the average amount of time between, say, when they start thinking about divorce and when they go through with it, and it's all so very specific to the situation between any two people. I would say I think people, a little lateral to that question, I'd say people get married too soon, which is not to say too young or after too brief a relationship, but I think people a lot of times get married before they actually get educated in terms of what marriage actually means. And, they're entering into this legally binding, super hard to get out of, contract between themselves and the state and this other person. And I think that the biggest problem I see in divorces is that people, when they got married, didn't know what they were getting themselves into, if you follow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can see that. In Washington, what are the grounds for the divorce?
Washington, and I'm glad you specified, because divorce law, family law, all of that stuff is super different between states. There's not really much in the way of federal law that affects family law and whatnot other than through taxes. So all states are pretty different. But in Washington, we're a no-fault divorce state, which means that all you need in order to get a divorce is the time and energy to actually do the paperwork and wanting to get a divorce. You have to be able to say honestly that you believe the relationship is permanently, irretrievably broken. And that's it.
And that's it. Anything else unique about the divorce laws in the state? Or?
Well, Washington State's a community property law. I don't know if that's, I know it's not unique. There are other states that are community property states, although not a whole lot of them. That's a little bit unusual in Washington, and that's a whole specific way of going about divorce and marriage. Other than that, we're a real progressive state. One of those solidly blue states every time, and we tend to be on the forefront of trying new things and making efforts. We got same-sex marriage legalized here a little bit ahead of the federal stuff. We've got some interesting things going on, and this is a particular interest to me, trying to work with alternative families. We've got some interesting stuff happening around parentage with the de facto parentage case law that's developing, which is basically a set of laws where it's possible to become a legal parent of a child if, how can I simplify this? If the right set of circumstances line up and you have been treated like the parent of a child, sometimes you can become the parent of a child, which sounds a little weird now that I'm saying it out loud. But really good for kids in certain circumstances, because we all have had circumstances like that. We've seen circumstances like that. Some kid has a single parent, and a friend of that parent ends up being like a parent to that kid, but then ends up having no legal foundation for doing anything. And then it can be bad for kids sometimes when the people who are actually parenting them don't have the ability to stand up for that status. So we're working on that out here. It's a kind of a delicate process. But it's interesting. I don't quite know necessarily how best to answer the question of what's unique here, because I only practice in Washington. So it all seems very normal.
Good point. Yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah, it doesn't seem unique to you because that's where you practice. How about mediation? Do you take your clients to mediation? Is that common?
Oh yeah. I would say most cases we end up in mediation. Because here's the thing, right? This probably applies to every area of law, but in family law specifically, there's really only two ways that a case ends, right? Either the people go to trial and a judge decides what happens, or the two people reach an agreement on their own, and then, the court signs off on that agreement. So, it's probably 99% of my cases, and I know it's about 95% across the state of family law cases, end up settling out of court, which means the people have come to some kind of an agreement. That can happen without mediation, but more often than not, it's helpful to have some neutral third party who can, talk to the people and sort of try to help them find their way to common ground. Mediation's real common. In fact, in King County, which is where I primarily practice, and the rules around this stuff a little different in different counties. In King County, they have mandatory alternative dispute resolution. You have to try mediation before you're even allowed to go to trial. And there's exceptions to that if domestic violence is involved and other sort of narrow exceptions. But mediation is super common here.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because if you go to trial, you're going to be in front of a judge that doesn't know you, and he's going to cut things up with an axe, whereas, mediation is going to be like a scalpel. It's still painful, but at least it's based on the facts and what's going on, mediation is. I think that's a fair statement on my part, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the additional aspect of, the parties in the mediation, ultimately, again, they're doing the deciding, right? There's not, like you say, the judge is using an axe. And then, judges are doing their best, but they're people, and they have maybe a few days worth of interaction with the parties in question. So a lot of times they're splitting the baby, as it were.
Yeah.
In mediation, we have a lot more leeway to do creative things. The parties can come to some kind of an agreement. Even if it's not something that a trial court would normally do, so long as it's not illegal, we can often put it into place. And that actually it's worth me mentioning here. I mentioned a couple of times collaborative law, which is getting big, and this might be a unique thing to Washington, or at least it's not super common across the country yet. A collaborative law is actually a process where the entire divorce process happens outside the courtroom, and we sign an agreement right up front that everybody's agreeing we're not going into the courtroom. We're going to, you know, by gum, we're going to solve this through talking and collaboration, and it's basically, would it be fair to say, it's kind of like having an extended mediation session just over the course of the whole case, but everybody's really working together and trying to be supportive of the sort of holistic approach that collaborative law entails. So that's another big thing that's happening around here.
Okay, now three things: alimony, child support, and custody. Let's take each one separately. Alimony, do you see a lot of that in Washington, or what's the deal?
it's pretty common. Alimony, we don't call it that in Washington anymore. We call it spousal maintenance or spousal support. But it's the same concept. It's pretty common. The whole notion of alimony or spousal maintenance started back in a time when functionally women couldn't realistically work. They weren't really allowed to work. They weren't allowed to be earners in the same way that is now, 70% available to them. So this began as a way for women to be able to help women get out of bad situations, so they have some economic fallback. And we've moved away from the sort of gender-specific direction of spousal maintenance. Given the income disparity between men and women that still exists, usually we see it going from the higher paid husbands to their, exing wives, but I've had it go either way. And really the whole system now is we look at who's making more money. Can the person who makes less or no money get by without help? If not, and if the person with the greater income can survive on less than their full income, we kind of look at what that sort of disposable income, not quite the right word, but what that disposable portion is and how much we would need to share to the lower earner so that they can get by. It's not usually permanent. A lot of people are worried, oh my God, I have to pay this forever. And it's usually, maybe a few months or a few years, depending on how long the marriage was. But it is really common, though, yes.
Okay. And child support, that kind of dovetails into this as well. Is it prevalent, and how is it calculated?
It is. If there are children, then child support at least has to be considered. It's not even optional. It's one of the few things that it's one of the few things that the courts won't necessarily take the party's agreement at face value, because they're looking at it like these kids are the ones who are in need of support. The parents, if they agree, that's all well and good, but if it's not doing right by the kids, and that's really our focus, and I think most courts across the country are this way, but in Washington, definitely, the best interest of the child is right at the forefront. So child support tends to be pretty mechanical around here. We look at how much each party earns. We plug that into a really intimidatingly large table, a little bit like an actuarial table, but it's not. And it lives in the statute. Oh God, is it 26.19? I don't remember the last three digits of the statute off the top of my head. But anyway, it's a big table. Just plug in the numbers. It spits out a child support amount, and usually we go with that. We see sometimes there's reason to deviate from the statutory table numbers, but honestly, most of the time, we just stick with that.
Okay. And custody, is it joint, or what is it?
Well, we don't, in Washington at least, we don't really do sole custody anymore. A couple times. I've had a couple of cases where one parent had the child all the time, but that's only in circumstances where the other parent is, in prison or, been super, super violent. And even in the case of really abusive people, Washington really does believe that a child is better off with, access to two parents. And so even with pretty bad parents usually will see at least an effort to give the child some kind of access to their parent, you know, under strict supervision, you know, if necessary. But most, almost every case, both parents have some, at least some contact with the child. The whole sort of traditional, you know, one parent has the kid most of the time, the other parent has every other weekend, is still probably the most common way of putting things together, but it's by no means the only way that we see it happen. It's not required anywhere in the law. It's just, I don't know, sort of a cultural tradition that we haven't worked our way out of. But I see lots of 50-50 parenting plans. You know, a lot of people, men especially, seem to really be worried that they're going to lose access to their kids. There's sort of this notion that moms are heavily favored in this kind of thing. And I mean, realistically, I think there's still some degree of that, but it's not encoded in the law anywhere anymore at all. And in fact, there was a big push to get that sort of, again, that gendered expectation taken out of the law. You know, we still live in a culturally normative state where, you know, more often than not, if there's one breadwinner, it's the husband. And if there's, you know, someone who's staying at home, it's the wife or mother. So we do see more often than not, the kids end up spending more time with mom, but it really is based on who has been spending most of the time with the kids during the marriage, as opposed to just because she's the mother.
Absolutely. Okay. And Nathan, what's the most common question you get?
What's it going to cost?
Yeah, okay.
Usually people want to know what's it going to cost.
How long is this going to take?
No, that's another good one. That's a much easier one to answer, frankly. Which is usually, well, I don't know, how long is it going to take you guys to come to an agreement?
Yeah.
Although in Washington, we have a mandatory 90-day waiting period, so it'll take at least 3 months. We're just required to take that long. It usually doesn't take more than a year because trials are set out that long. Other common questions? Hey, can I ask you a quick question? That's usually the first thing after people find out I do this. And actually that's worth talking about for a minute. It's just, you know, people really, really want there to be clear answers, in family law. You know, they say, oh, this is really quick and really simple. And it almost never is. The answer to family law questions, really end up being super fact intensive and really depending on the circumstances and the context of their situation. So yeah, more often than not, people want to know kind of more practical things, though. How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? You know, do I have to have an attorney? That's a big one. And the answer is no, you're not required to have an attorney for a divorce law. People get it done without an attorney.
Yeah, I don't know that I would recommend that.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either. But people do it anyway.
Yeah. They try to give it a shot. Our guest today on Ask the Expert, Nathan Cliver with Seattle Divorce Services in Seattle, Washington. Nathan, how can you be reached?
Well, you can find our firm's website at www.seattledivorceservices.com. I don't mind getting emails directly if people have inquiries or questions. I'm just Nathan@seattledivorceservices.com. You can call in. Our phone number here is 206-784-3049. Make appointments through that number. Our receptionist, Linda, is a lovely woman, and she'll help you out. I'm also actually currently, because of where I'm trying to take my practice, again, with the alternative family law notion, we're working right now on a sort of lateral website to capture some of that. It's just altfamilylaw.com. There's nothing really useful up there yet, but, you know, stay tuned and come back in, I don't know, probably a couple of weeks we'll have something up there.
Oh, neat. Okay. Well, that's great. And if you're in the Seattle area, and you know, family law is the key here. Nathan is a family attorney. If you need some help, you know how to get a hold of him. Nathan, thanks for being on Ask the Expert today.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks for listening to Ask the Expert with Steve Sleeper. Join us next time as entrepreneurs and professionals share their intriguing stories of success and service.